I have Mike Miller with me here in the studio. He is one of the swimmers that went from Split Rock to Duluth in Lake Superior without a wetsuit earlier this week. And Mike, I don't know, you did wait so long to do this race, I would say. On the other hand, the frantic tone of that song is not really the way the swim went. Anyway, thank you so much for being with us in the studio this morning.
Thank you, Katya.
Let me make sure I got the right mic on. Try it again.
Thank you, Katya.
Oh, there we go. Yes. So Mike was one of the swimmers, and you were also one of the organizers, I happen to know. So let's just start by saying this swim, because it was maybe especially because it was, you know, an official swim that may be ratified as a record swim, there was a lot of logistics to plan for this. How long have you been working on this event?
This has been largely since last December, I'd say. And in terms of us swimmers prepping for cold water, an ideal time for that is late fall as the temperatures drop off for the lakes in the outside of this region. So that was really important to draw back on that and have that experience in advance.
Yeah, how much did you train in cold water previous to this? Cold meaning, and how cold? I'm curious how cold you swam.
It always seems to be not enough, but it's all, at least from my perspective, with my low body fat, it's controlled hypothermia. Always in the mild, you're always watching, at least I'm always watching how much time I'm in, and there's a lot of variables that you need to be aware of, and we were jumping to the event itself. We were just so fortunate that a number of things fell into place for us. We always need to have great respect for the big lake.
Absolutely. And the conditions did allow. The water was over 60 degrees. Although, you know, most people would say, you know, they'd still look at you a little bit askance to say, well, it was so warm. It was, you know, 62, 63 degrees. And, you know, I've swum in water that temperature for swimming in that for an hour, that still does a number on the body temperature. How was it? You did four different stints, four different hours. How was that, the temperature in the end for you and for the other swimmers?
It's a challenge at 4 a.m. when you have no sunlight on your skin and colder air temperatures and wind. So there's multiple factors that can make it obviously more mentally challenging. But we've all had experiences swimming in the dark, and we had that under our belt, so to speak.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of all the questions that listeners would have were they in the studio for you with us here. And I know that one question would just be, you know, what was the difference between day and night? Did it all go like clockwork? What were the hitches? And what was it like being on a team like that rather than swimming by yourself?
It was a bit of a challenge that we had. We all took turns becoming the swim captain, so to speak, to help get the next swimmer into the water on a like clockwork. So it gets more difficult in the middle of the night when people disappear to catch a cat nap.
Yeah.
But a large part of it is social and camaraderie and team building, and, you know, the greater message here really needs to be that for the environmental aspects of what we're pointing out. So there's analogies to be compared to that, and I may have drifted off from what your listeners may have wanted me to ask, but that was something that exceeds the importance of us stating the distance we're swimming and other solely swim related aspects.
Yeah, I think the dilemma is one that is familiar here, which is that we know about our warming planet, and we also know that in some ways it makes things easier for us here on the North Shore, where, you know, tussling with the cold is a huge part of life. And I know that I have really enjoyed swimming in Lake Superior, even though it's something I know that, you know, my father, my parents could not have done. And it seems like, you know, those things aren't mutually exclusive. You know, we absolutely cannot control whether or not the lake is swimmable tomorrow. So we will swim it when we can, but also use it as a, like you said, an opportunity to talk about how the lake is warming. I know the average temperature for Lake Superior, the average high is 59 degrees. Now that's very long term, and I think even the last 30 years that has changed significantly, but just so we keep that in mind. But you know, there are also old timers on this, you know, lifetime residents and boaters that know that, you know, with an average of 59 degrees, there have always been years when it would get into the 60s at least on the surface. And so, you know, I think your chances of having a warm enough day were greater now, but, you know, the lake does vary. And, you know, what you did could have been done on the perfect day probably 100 years ago, too. So an accomplishment either way. And I think one thing that I noticed is you did do the swim almost exactly at the speed you thought you would do it, which was 24 hours. I think you did it in just under 24 hours. Do you guys all just know exactly how fast you swim? Is that how that could work so easily?
That was a rough thumb in the air, basically.
Okay. So you got lucky, too.
There's lucky squared, lucky many times over here.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The experienced guidance of the captains and the information available from them just immediately prior to the event, the wind, predominant wind directions just before the event really allowed the swim to be much closer to shore.
Right.
Made it easier for people to see us as we went by, and made it easier for us if we needed to take one of the early exits. We had three well-defined exits along the way if it was necessary due to a number of circumstances. So that the fact that the final navigation route for the swim was that close to shore was also yet another godsend.
Yeah. And now you had six swimmers, each swimming an hour at a time. And let's just give people an idea of how many other people were involved in this. Tell us about some of the other players, the support team.
Yeah, if you just think about where the swimmer is in the water, right next to them typically was a kayaker that did a fantastic job. And in many ways, the unsung heroes are everyone all around the swimmer. And even people that do solo swims. There's no such thing as a solo swim
in the fact
when you think about all the support around you. So, and then adjacent to the swimmer and the kayak, there was the lead sailboat and three captains and two observers on board. And
tell us the purpose of the observers.
The observers have an important role to monitor a number of parameters, the water temperatures, the air temperature, the winds. They are counting how fast the swimmer is the number of cycles each swimmer is doing to see if they're slowing down or if there's some sign of distress. Many times swimmers, as they slip into mild hypothermia, if you ask them if they're how are they feeling, they say they're okay. But there's other signs that you look at that can give an early indication for that. And as a relay swim, 60 minutes, the clock, it passes by pretty quickly. So it's not, the probability is quite low. It's guaranteed that heat is transferring from the warm body to the cold body of water. But it's, like I say, a controlled release of heat. Heat letting of sorts, as I kind of jokingly refer to.
And do you slow that transfer down by speeding up? Like, if you swim faster, is it warmer for you, or does that not help?
Yes, that helps to a certain extent.
Okay.
But back to your original question, I need to continue on with all the many people involved. The trailing vessel, the Soulmates dive vessel, had a dive platform, which allowed us to transfer on and off the boat quite easily, and a great rewarming facilities for us as we got back to normal temperatures. And and then exterior to that is a ground support crew with with Bonnie Peterson and Connie out monitoring our progress. And it's just there's many people involved throughout this that really made it a safe event and an unforgettable one.
Yeah, and a really fun one. What have you heard since it's ended from, I mean, I know you've gotten a lot of media attention. It was fun to watch that interview with the Star Tribune and NPR, you know, once you were on the beach. Has the level of interest surprised you at all?
I'm up here with a family, our total size is 10, so I've been playing more tourists than following all the news, but I did see the NPR, and I have looked at social media a bit, but I haven't really had a chance to really fully absorb it.
Yeah.
But I understand I understand it's the news is continuing to spread, and we're happy, very happy that it's good news for a good cause.
I think it's so fun when part of it is, you know, it's the end of August and there's a lot of not great news out there right now. So just to have something that everyone could just feel so happy about, I think, has really helped it to spread also. And I have to say the sort of fun that you swimmers had with it was so apparent to me when you came up on the beach at the end. And I mean, honestly, the kayaker, Paul, he was exhausted, clearly, and he is a hero for how he stuck by your side through thick and thin. But you swimmers looked great. Like, you just looked like you were ready to, you probably weren't really ready to do another, but it sure looked like it. And it was just, it reminded me what a fun and inspiring thing swimming in open water can be. I hope that spread to many people. I mean, your energy really was there. And you didn't even really know each other much before the race, right? It wasn't like you had been doing this with those people before.
Yeah, it's places like San Francisco are pretty unique where there's one common watering hole where many people in a club of 1,200 members, well, two clubs each with that are side by side. And you just have a constant stream of people coming in and out. For us in the Northland, there's no one common location.
Yeah,
so it gets
right.
more difficult with modernity, with the fact that we're all with our busy lives. So that's where it's just so remarkable to just get out in the water and clear the cobwebs out of your mind. You've got this rhythmic breathing similar to yoga, and you just become one with the water. And we just want to inspire others to find those other places in life where you can do that. And again, it's really quite unusual to be able to do that in Lake Superior.
Yep, and it really happens. Speaking of getting one with the water, there's a rumor flying about that you actually did some poetry in your mind during the night with the full moon out there. Do you want to tell us the poem that you were thinking about or reciting, or how did that go?
Sure. Well, the third time was the charm. I kept telling the observers that I was going to be doing a backstroke, and it was a near full moon, so I wanted to make it memorable, and I'd practiced this poem with my daughter. And but each of the first two times, the waves were so rough, and I was quickly knowing that I needed to keep a good pace, and just felt like it just, So I said I was going to do it, but I didn't do it. So finally on the third time, it was late enough in the evening where it was calm enough where I could recite that. And it's a poem I saw on the locker door of an individual who swam from just offshore from Alcatraz to the aquatic park in San Francisco. He's swum that more than 1,000 times, and that was 5 years ago, so it's been even more than that. But anyway, that poem was on his locker, and I just, the last stanza of it is, it's always ourselves we find in the sea, and that resonates well with any open water swimmer that spends a significant amount of time in the water. So the name of the poem is Maggie, Millie, Molly and May. So your readers can look it up and probably see the link and interest it has to to open water swimmers.
Yeah, I'm sure, especially. But it should hopefully reach other people as well. And anybody who, I mean, I know there's a growing number of people just living along the shore who take their dips, you know, at least in the summer. Now, let's just move. Before we end, I just want to make it known that this swim was also documented for a film, a documentary that should be coming out later this year that is about Lake Superior and climate change and how it's affecting the lake and all the things related to that. And there were some pretty professional videographers doing this as part of the whole thing. And that is a partnership between the PBS North and the Center for Global Environmental Education with Hamline University. So, Mike, from your perspective, was it any different knowing that that you were being filmed this whole time?
Yeah, I guess there's always the...
A little more conscious of what it looks like or how it's going?
Yeah, it didn't take long to not have that be any issue. And the videographer was wonderful to have along. It was interesting that, and no, it was a great engagement that occurred amongst all the players.
Yeah, I think one fun thing about it is it will allow a lot of people to sort of be more intimately involved with what happened. You know, he was everywhere, showing, you know, all the different phases of it. So when that film comes out, you know, anyone who watched from a distance or anyone who's interested will be able to see what really happened through this film. So we'll stay tuned for that. I'm sure we'll announce that on the radio as it comes out. It's supposed to be maybe November, December. So we will keep you posted on that. I'm speaking with Mike Miller, one of the swimmers who went from Split Rock to Duluth in a potentially record-breaking swim this past week. And thank you so much, Mike. Is there anything that you'd like to add before we sign off?
I just appreciate the support we've had from our collaboration with Hamline University's Center for Global Environmental Education. And I'm happy to be on dry land. Stable.
Still warming up.
Stable ground. And I'm still loading up on calories. Part of it was...
I bet. All right, I have to ask, do you like lose a bunch of weight during a swim like that?
I keep trying to gain weight. I'm looking for suggestions on how to do that.
Okay.
we want to inspire people to look at the changes that are going on around them. And I'll try to keep this short. I know you're finishing up.
No, go for it. We have time.
This whole aspect of just subtle temperature changes over the years and decades, I think maybe a good challenge to someone who might think it may not be all that important is to just make an adjustment to your thermostat in your home by a similar yearly amount. You're sure to save on energy, and it may be easier to get the point across that you know, this is a small change does make a big difference in the long term.
Over time, absolutely, that's a really good point. Small changes over time make a huge difference. 2 degrees, 1 degree in your household. And like if these swimmers can swim in 60 degrees, you can maybe turn your thermostat down. I like that. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you for your time, Katya.
Yes, you take care. That was Mike Miller. He is one of the swimmers that swam from Split Rock to Duluth this past week. And that interview will be rebroadcast tomorrow morning between 9 and 11 a.m. and perhaps again in the future. Also, it will be uploaded onto our website, ktwh.org. So tell your family and friends about it